Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Naaman Novetzky discusses Parshat Zachor, the special maftir section from Devarim, which is read on the Shabbat before Purim. Naaman Novetzky is a faculty member at Pardes, and her focus is the Tanakh. And now, Naaman Novetzky.
Thank you, Larry. This coming Shabbat is one of the four special Shabbatot in the weeks preceding Pesach and Purim, in which instead of the regular Maftir, a special portion of the Torah is read. This week, the Parsha is known as Parshat Zachor. In light of the upcoming holiday of Purim and the tale of Haman, who according to Chazal is a descendant of Amalek, we read a short section from the 25th chapter of Devarim, in which we are commanded to remember what Amalek did to us when we left Egypt. Let's read the psukim inside. Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek, baderach betzeitcha mimitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did to you on your way as you left Egypt. Asher karcha baderach, what happened to you on the way. Vayizanev becha kol hanechashalim acharecha, vata ayif viageya velo yarei Elohim. And he smote the hindmost of thee, all that were feeble in thy rear, when you were faint and weary and not fearing of God. And it shall be when God shall give you rest from all of your enemies around you, in the land that God will give you, you shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven, thou shalt not forget. The command is an interesting one, because we are simultaneously commanded to remember Amalek, and at the very same time, to erase the zecher of Amalek, to erase the memory of Amalek. This is, of course, something of an oxymoron. And equally, and perhaps even more troubling question, is why are we commanded to do this anyway? What did Amalek do to us that was so terrible that we are commanded to obliterate his memory? What distinguishes him from the many other nations who have similarly attacked Bnei Yisrael over the centuries? Why has he been singled out that is his memory that must be erased? Over the next 20 minutes or so, let's look at several approaches that answer these questions. But first, a little bit of background. The actual attack of Amalek is described in the 17th chapter of Shmot Perek Yud Zayin, where we are told that soon after Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, soon after they left Egypt, they find themselves in a place called Rephidim without any water. Soon after they get water miraculously from the rock, Amalek comes and attacks. Moshe puts Yehoshua in charge of the army, and he himself stands slightly further away, and we're told that all the time that Moshe's hands were up and raised, we won the battles. Whenever Moshe's hands went down, we lost. In order to give him extra strength, two people come and hold Moshe's hands up, and eventually we win the battle. Of course, some people see these hand raising as a similar type of morale booster, similar to a flag bearer. Chazal, though, put it in a slightly different way. All the time that Bnei Yisrael's eyes are turned towards God, that's when we win. These psukim, of course, though, are not so detailed. They don't give us any idea as to the motivation of Amalek. Why did they come to attack? Who is Amalek anyway? As there are no extra biblical sources that discuss Amalek, all we know about them comes from the Mikra, from the text of the Torah itself, and from Tanakh as a whole. If one puts together all the different psukim, all the different verses, and the picture that emerges is that of a nomadic tribe, descendants of Esav, who raised cattle, lived in the area of the Negev and the Sinai Desert. They didn't engage in agriculture, but rather lived by plundering others. They were hired hand in others' wars. They raided the Negev and other areas, and thus supported themselves. So where does their enmity toward Bnei Israel come from? Why did they attack Bnei Israel as they left Egypt? The different commentators offer several different approaches. Rashi reads the entire story from a theological perspective. He says, Amalek didn't come to attack of their own accord. But rather, Amalek was a tool of God, coming in order to give a message, in order to give a lesson to Bnei Israel. He says, we have to read our story in light of what came right before it. The story before the attack of Amalek is one in which Bnei Israel complained to God for lack of water. God then gives them a miracle, and they get water. But time after time after time, they complain. So Rashi says, why is the story of Amalek placed where it is? Samach parsha zo l'mikra zeh lomar tamid ani b'neichem u'mizuman l'chol tzarcheichem v'atem omrim hayesh Hashem b'kerbeinu im ayin. He says, you know what happens throughout the time that Bnei Israel in the Midbar? I'm always there for you, God says. I'm always ready to provide all your needs. But what do? You say, where's God? Is he with us or not? Chayechem shehakelev ba v'noshech etchem. I swear to you, a dog will come and bite you. V'atem tzokim elai v'tedun hechanani. And then you'll scream to me and you'll know where I am. Mashal la'adam sherkiv b'no aktefo v'yatsa l'derech. It's an analogous to a person who carried his sons on his shoulders and they went on the way. Hayao teu ben ro'eh chifet v'omer abba tol chifet zeh v'tein li. The son would see something he wants. He'd say, Abba, go give me that. V'hu notein lo, and the father gives him. V'chein shniyah, v'chein shishit, time after time. Ga'o ba'adam achad. They met a man on the way. Amar lo oto haben, ra'it et Abba? Have you seen my father? Amar lo aviv, in chayodea hechanani? What, you don't know where I am, says the father? Hishlicho me'alav u'ba ha'kelev v'nishachal. So he threw him down, and a dog bit him. The message, of course, is clear. Hashem is saying to Bnei Israel, I provide you with food, I provide you with water, I provide you with manna. And constantly, every time the slightest obstacle comes, you come and say, where's God? I'm going to show you where God is by punishing you, by sending you Amalek. Others read the attack of Amalek in quite different ways, from a much more practical perspective. They ask, why did Amalek come and attack Bnei Israel? For the simple reason that they were vying for grazing land. The Amalekites raise cattle. Bnei Israel also had lots of cattle. They're now moving into the desert. There's not enough for both. So Amalek goes and fights and attacks. Chizkuni reads the attack in a quite different way. He says, "Ve'ilachem im Yisrael mipnei sinat mechivat habechora." He says, why did the Amalekites attack Bnei Israel? Because of their hatred for the selling of the birthright. What is Chizkuni saying? He's taking the background, knowing that the Amalekites are descendants of Esav, and suggests that one has to read our story not as an independent attack on Bnei Israel, but rather as part of a much larger tale of hatred between two brothers. Amalek are the descendants of Esav. Just like Esav had hated Yaakov, perhaps stemming from the sale of the birthright, so too, Amalek is continuing that story. Don't read this as an independent tale. It's part of a much larger history. All these answers, though, don't quite satisfy us in trying to figure out why exactly Amalek, though, deserves to be obliterated. Still, what was so terrible? If we take the approach that it was just competition for grazing land, that's not much worse than any other reason for attacking. And of course, Rashi's approach that the Amalekites were just tools of God simply highlights our question. So how do we understand this? The Mefarshim, in order to try to approach the question, look a little bit more at the language, both in Devarim and the context of our story in Shmot. Rashi suggests that the real problem was in the timing of the attack. Meaning what? The Amalekites were the first. Let's read Rashi inside. Asher karcha baderech, lashon mikre, davar acher, lashon kor vachom, In Devarim, our psukim tell us that we should remember what happened along the way. But Rashi says, let's look at this in a slightly different way. And he makes a play on words. Asher karcha baderech milashon kor. From the language of cold. Meaning what? Tzinenancha vehevshircha meritichatecha. Shehayu kol haumot yireim lihilachem bachem. Ubaze vihitchil viheramakom laachirim. He says, what happens? Imagine that Bnei Yisrael are like a boiling pot. What do Amalek come and do? They cool off that pot. All of the nations have been afraid to fight against Bnei Yisrael until the first one started. Amalek came, and once he broke the ice, once he came and attacked, he made room for all others to attack. So for Rashi, what's so terrible about Amalek isn't so much what they did, but that they were the first, that they paved the way for others to attack afterwards. Others suggest that the problem doesn't have to do with the timing, but rather with the attitude of Amalek. Going back to the psukim in Devarim, they say, let's look at what happened. It says that the Amalekites attacked when va'ata ayif v'yagea v'lo yirei Elohim, when you're tired and weary and not fearful of God. On the first read, most of us assume that the words "v'lo yirei Elohim," that you weren't fearing God, refer back to Bnei Israel. Interestingly, though, many Mefarshim, Ibn Ezra, and others, suggest that the words "yirei Elohim" are really referring back not to Bnei Israel but to Amalek, and they are a description of Amalek. What was the problem of Amalek? That they did not fear God. All the other nations feared God, with the exception of Amalek. The Abarbanel goes in this direction and elaborates a bit. He suggests there are quite a few legitimate reasons for attacking. A defensive war is legitimate. Even certain offensive wars are legitimate if one is waging a war of revenge. And even if one is waging a war of conquest, that's all understandable. But he said Amalek was doing something different. None of these reasons apply. Instead, he says, what was the motivation of Amalek? Lima'et bechavod ha'eloha yitbarach. Their sole reason for fighting, he suggests, was to diminish the glory of God. He says, Lefi sheshem'u amim yirgazun et ma'aseh Hashem, ki norahu asher asa be'eret Mitzrayim leinei paro uleinei avado. He says, all the other nations heard what God had done in Egypt, what he had done to Paro, what he had done to Paro's servants. V'shekulam ke'achad amru Hashem hu Elokim. And they recognized that everyone had recognized God and said, God is the Lord. All of these people seeing the acts of God had come to fear God. Ratza Amalek latzeit lihilachim b'Yisrael. So what did Amalek want to do? To go fight against Israel. V'laharog otam v'lachalotam me'al pnei hadama. To kill them and to destroy them from the face of the earth. Why? Be'inyan sheyit parsem goldel gevurato, v'shemi bilti yacholet Hashem lo atzarbo. Why does he want to do this? So that his name shall become famous for his strength, and so that he can show others that because of the lack of ability of God, he didn't stop them. Hinei hayta hasiba hatachlit, Keneged hakel yitbarach lema'it shemo ulakel bechvodo. The whole point of their attack was to do a denigration of God's name, a chilul Hashem, to prove to the world that God can't, that God wasn't able. So for the Abarbanel, it's understandable then why what Amalek did was so terrible. They weren't just attacking Bnei Israel; they were attacking Hashem. Interestingly, others pick up on these very same words, v'lo yirei Elohim, but they go in a very, very different direction. They suggest, if one takes a peek in Tanakh at how the words yirei Elohim appear in Tanakh, one actually notices that they don't only refer to a relationship between God and man, but actually, quite often, refer to our relationship between man and his fellow man. Nahum Sarna, in his book Exploring Exodus, points out, the reference to the fear of God here is highly significant. It often appears in connection with situations that invoke norms of moral and ethical conduct. Fear of God in the biblical concept thus decisively affects human conduct. It acts as the ultimate restraint upon perfidy and inhumanity, particularly in situations in which self-interest might tempt one to exploit the weak and the disadvantaged, and where the threat of legal sanctions does not exist. Sarna here is pointing out that in Tanakh, we see the phrase Yirei Elohim in connection mainly with human conduct. It acts as a restraint when you might not act or behave appropriately to your fellow man. He brings a whole selection of psukim from Sefer Vayikra to demonstrate this concept. We read in Sefer Vayikra, you shall not insult the deaf or place a stumbling block before the blind. You shall fear your God. Your At Elohim is connected to your relations with those that are less advantaged than you. Similarly, you shall rise before the aged and show deference to the old. You shall fear your God. Do not wrong one another, but fear your God. If your brother being in straits comes under your authority, do not exact from him advanced or accrued interest, but fear your God. In all of these psukim and Sefer Vayikra, we have a command that deals with the relationships between man and his fellow man, specifically with man and one who is disadvantaged. And in each case, the pasuk ends, fear your God. Your At Elohim has to do with how you're going to behave toward your fellow man. So what does that mean in our psukim? Sarna continues, in the case of the Amalekites, what occurred was treacherous, brutal, unprovoked aggression against an unsuspecting and largely defenseless Israel at the moment of its national liberation. The Amalekites attacked from the rear so that it was the infirm, the weak, and the weary who bore the brunt of the merciless and indiscriminate assault. The Amalekite aggressors were not God-fearing. They were impervious to any considerations of morality. The problem with the attack of Amalek, according to Sarna, according to this approach, wasn't in the timing, wasn't in the attitude or the motivation, but rather was in the method of the attack, was in the fact that they went and they took advantage of B'nai Israel's weak position. They attacked the infirm, they attacked the weak, they attacked from the back. They came sneakily. They came as terrorists come. The problem with Amalek was that they were not Yirei Elohim. They did not feel themselves bound to any ethical or moral code. They thought they could do as they pleased. The Netziv, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berliner, takes this approach perhaps to its natural conclusion. He goes back to our very original point about the oxymoronic nature of our command. He asks, how is it possible that we're told simultaneously to remember Amalek and to erase Amalek? Especially since this command is written in the Torah forcing us to remember Amalek. So he says, maybe we're supposed to read the pasuk slightly more metaphorically. When the pasuk says to erase Amalek, what do they mean? It says, the pasuk is telling us that we should erase Te'udat Amalek Ba'olam. What we have to erase is the legacy of Amalek. He writes, "Va'amalek hu reshit goyim, hasonei et hashkacha tachlit sin'ah." Says, Amalek is the head of the nations who has the utmost hatred for the idea of providence, for recognizing that there's something on top of you, something that is correct or incorrect that you have to abide by. V'hevtiach HaKadosh Baruch Hu ki tagi ha'sha'ah, so God promised that a time would come, she'yimchazek ha'amalek, that we will erase this memory of Amalek, haynu tachlit tu'odato, the legacy of Amalek, she'tiyena halichot ha'teva chafshi b'li hashkacha l'fi ha'ma'asim. We're going to erase the desire to live free, without any moral code of ethics, without any yir'at Elokim. Ze haratzon yenishkach me'umot olam. It is this desire that needs to be forgotten from the world. For the Netziv, the point of the command here in Sefer Dvarim is to teach us that everyone must live by a moral code of ethics. The Amalekites did not. They had no Yirat Elohim. They had no fear of God, no fear of any higher authority. They thought you could live as you want. You could do whatever you want. You can come attack the weak, the poor from the back. No rights, no wrongs. The Netziv says, this is what is our job to obliterate. And so I wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom and an upcoming Purim Sameach, one in which we shall be able to accomplish this and have everyone living according to a moral code of ethics.
Thank you, Nema. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.